Well, of course it was going to rain in the opening round of the first Fall Masters. Of course it was going to do that. But then the clouds moved away, they had a beautiful shot of a rainbow there, and golf has resumed, and man, it just feels good to have the Masters back on. I mean, now that we've gotten through kind of the bulk of all the sports restart, you know, the NBA is done, the NHL is done, Major League Baseball is done, Major League Soccer is about to get their playoffs started, IndyCar is done, NASCAR is done. So, I mean, really, it's just the NFL and college football that are kind of in the spotlight right now. And then, like I said, Major League Soccer are going to start their playoffs here in about a week or so. But just feels right to kind of have the Masters on right now, where there's not a whole, you know, we're not enthralled in the huge sports mania that we had when everything was getting back up and going again. And it just felt good to wake up and watch golf this morning, watch a major, look at Augusta National again. And thankfully, I kind of slept through because, you know, obviously it's in Georgia, so a little bit of a time change there. And luckily, I was able to sleep through the rain delay portion of the golfing this morning. So I was able to wake up and enjoy golf, enjoy the Masters. I was getting ready to come into work, and it just felt right. But we will talk more about the Masters later on in the show. Also take a look, of course, at a headline that's kind of going around the world of the NBA, and that's the future of Russell Westbrook and James Harden in Houston. So we'll talk about that. Also take a look at some other NFL headlines as we get set for Week 10. And that's where we're going to start. Week 10, Thursday Night Football, and it's a battle for the AFC South crown. The Tennessee Titans taking on the Indianapolis Colts in Tennessee. And, I mean, really, this game could really decide kind of the second half road the AFC South takes. Because if Tennessee wins this game, they create a little bit of space between themselves and Indianapolis. Because Tennessee would go to 7-2, while Indianapolis would fall to 5-4. So Tennessee would give themselves a couple games of breathing room and then have the initial tie break over Indianapolis. Of course, they'll play for a second time later on this season, but they would have that in the bag as well as those couple games lead as they embark into the second half of the year. And then, of course, if Indianapolis wins, we have 2-6-3 teams, and Indianapolis at this point would hold the tiebreak, the divisional tiebreak, and they would jump into first place. So the winner tonight, essentially Tennessee holds on to first, or Indianapolis jumps into first, and that could really dictate, you know, how the second half of the AFC South season goes with a fair amount of divisional games left to play. But should be an interesting game. I mean, Tennessee, of course, after their run to the AFC Championship last year, I think with Derrick Henry back there running like he is, I don't know if Tennessee was the hands-on favorite to win the AFC South. I didn't pick them to win the AFC South. I thought Houston was going to have something to say about that this year. And, boy, that's the one. I mean, Philadelphia has a bad record, but they could still win the NFC East. I mean, the Texans winning the AFC South, that's the one divisional winner that I picked at the beginning of the year that's looking the ugliest right now. But, you know, Indianapolis, this was not what I expected from the Colts. And it's nothing against Rivers. I don't have any kind of bitterness as, you know, from him being a former Charger or anything like that. I was kind of interested to see how he was going to do with the Colts. Because unlike the Chargers, Indianapolis isn't a team that's had a lot of offensive line issues or injuries where they've had a revolving door at almost every position like the Chargers have had. I mean, that was a huge problem when Phillip Rivers was the quarterback there. They just could not keep a steady and consistent offensive lineup or offensive line starting five heading into each game. It seemed like every game there was at least one change because of an injury that happened somewhere along either in the last game or throughout the week at practice. So the fact that he's had some consistency there in his offensive line, I think has shown that, you know, he can still be a quarterback that can lead a team to a solid season. I mean, his stats have never really been that bad. I mean, in terms of completion percentage, in terms of yards, I mean, the guy is a solid quarterback. And I've had to say that to a couple people when he was still with the Chargers. I had to defend that around the station here. But he just wasn't the right fit for the Chargers moving forward. So there's no kind of bitterness for me or anything. I wasn't hoping that he was going to fail in Indianapolis or anything like that. I was really more interested just to see how he was going to do. And he's having, you know, a solid year so far. He's not doing anything spectacular, but you know, Rivers isn't that kind of guy that's going to take off. And, you know, he's not like a Lamar Jackson or anybody like that, or a Russell Wilson that's going to showboat back there with his footwork or leave somebody in the dust. He kind of impresses you just with the way he throws the ball, the accuracy, the power. Sometimes doesn't have the best ideas in terms of throwing it down the field in the double or triple coverage, but he still is a solid quarterback back there. Indianapolis has been able to work their way into a 5-3 start to the season with him at quarterback. And then Tennessee, again, I think this was a team that wouldn't surprise a lot of people if they won the AFC South. Again, this was a team that beat New England, the Brady and Belichick Patriots. They beat the MVP Lamar Jackson last year when he was leading the Ravens to an unbelievable season. And the only team that was able to knock him off from a Super Bowl appearance was Kansas City and Mahomes, who brought out more of that fourth quarter magic. So Tennessee is in a position with a lot of those pieces kind of coming back, especially the one key piece in Derrick Henry. Tennessee is a contender. And I picked them still to make the playoffs as a wild card team because I think they've had that playoff contender ability all season long. They've been in that situation all season long. And for them to be 6-2 right now, again, I don't think it's really surprising anybody with the fact that Derrick Henry is still just an absolute animal. And while I feel like Tannehill hasn't had, I mean, he's been good. He's been that field general, that kind of just don't make mistakes, do your job kind of quarterback back there. You don't need him to be a Russell Wilson or a Lamar Jackson or a Patrick Mahomes that tries to take off and run for. I mean, he's still got some wheels, not the fastest guy in the NFL at quarterback, but he's doing enough to make sure that they have to at least respect that passing game. And if they don't, they load the box, try to stop Henry. He can do a good job of hurting secondaries and hurting defenses. And they're still playing good football. So I think tonight is going to be a really intriguing game between these two teams, because Indianapolis has one of, if not the best defense in the league. In terms of overall defense, they rank first in the NFL. So, I mean, this is a defense that is very much up to the task of stopping powerhouses. And they had a powerhouse in Derrick Henry that they got to try and slow down tonight. And that'll be interesting to see how that battle goes. Because if it comes down to whether or not Tannehill can make some throws late in the game, he's proven he can do that before. But prime time is a different type of ask. So we'll see how they handle that game, this game tonight, coming down the stretch of the Indianapolis Colts defense is as stingy as they've been at times this season. Both teams 3-2 coming into this game. Indianapolis losing their last outing against Baltimore 24-10. But before that, beat Cincinnati 31-27, beat Detroit 41-21. They lost to Cleveland, but beat Chicago. So you wouldn't say it's been, besides the game against Baltimore last week, it hasn't necessarily been the toughest lead up to this game against Tennessee. But you would say that about the Titans as well. I mean, they had a game against Buffalo, which they blew them out that Tuesday nighter, 42-16. And then, they had the overtime win against Houston, and they lost two to Pittsburgh, and they had the we can call it just kind of a rough loss. I don't know if I'd call it embarrassing, because Cincinnati is better than they were last year. Not that that's saying a whole lot with the Cincinnati team that they had last year, but it's a tough loss to have on your season. So they lost to Cincinnati a couple of weeks ago, then of course had the win against Chicago last week. But the Bears down 24-3 came back and made that a game at 24-17. So I wouldn't say that both of these teams are – either of these teams really are looking good, you know, really coming into this game. So that could be another factor. I think both these teams are looking to kind of get themselves back up into that kind of major title contender type atmosphere. And with both of them being a little rocky in their last five games coming into this primetime Thursday nighter, I could see these two teams giving it a little extra edge, having a little extra just kind of grit to it as they try to get back into those kind of convincing winning ways. You know, you're not squeaking out games. You're not trying to hold off a team from coming back like Tennessee was against Chicago. And, neither of these two teams have really played the major top talent besides, again, the game against Pittsburgh for Tennessee and then Indianapolis last week against Baltimore. So I think with that, the level of competition is going to be brought up between these two teams tonight. And again, just looking forward to what this is going to be, because Tennessee, I mean, again, you talk about how good the Colts defense has been, how stingy that defense has been. The Titans, however, have a plus 10 turnover differential this season, which is the most in the NFL. So that Tennessee defense has some grit to it too. And if Phillip Rivers isn't careful, then, you know, he had some turnovers last week, and I mean, you can't tackle anybody on your back. So we'll see if he does turn the ball over, if he gives himself a chance to at least stop the play from scoring. But I think this is going to be, you know, it's going to be a game full of some big offensive plays, but I feel like the defense might just have as many big defensive plays as the offenses do. So, I mean, I can't wait to see how the Tennessee Titans defense handles what has been a tough Colts offense to stop at times. And then Phillip Rivers, again, talked about that offensive line. He's only been sacked 7 times this season, which is the fewest among the 33 qualified QBs for that stat this year. So that offensive line, they give him chance because that's what he's needed. He is not a mobile guy. I remember vividly times where he would run when he was with the Chargers, and he would take off, and as soon as he crossed that line of scrimmage completely, your heart just sank. Like, oh, no, because he can't even really slide properly. So it was kind of just watching him try to get to the out-of-bounds marker before he got smashed, and then if he tried to slide, you were just crossing your fingers that his legs didn't get caught underneath him, and he pole-vaulted over himself like he did a couple times when he was with the Chargers. So if you give him a good offensive line, he shows that he can be a solid quarterback. So that's what they've given him this year. So we'll see again if that Titans defense can put any pressure on Rivers. But because of that offensive line and because of the way that they've been consistent and been able to give him protection, that's been part of this Colts success this year. So I'm really looking forward to see, you know, again, there's going to be a lot of matchups to watch, as there typically is in a football game, but offensive line of Indianapolis against the defensive line of Tennessee, it'll be interesting to see who wins that battle and if the Colts can continue to keep Phillip Rivers off his back. And then you think about, obviously, Phillip Rivers has been in the NFL for quite some time. Ryan Tannehill, while he's had his fair share of time in the NFL, played on a couple different teams, hasn't always been the starter. So to think that Tannehill has kind of dominated the series between him and Rivers, I don't know if you'd really expect that. Just because, again, they haven't, you know, a little bit of a time differential between when they both joined the league, and then Rivers has been the starter pretty much constantly throughout his career. Not really the same for Tannehill. But Ryan Tannehill, in the 5 meetings against Phillip Rivers, has won 4 of them. Tannehill is 4-1 against Rivers, and then of course Phillip Rivers is 1-4 against Tannehill. But if you look at the numbers between when they play each other, Ryan Tannehill has close to a 68% completion percentage. Phillip Rivers down to about 61%. Rivers actually does have 1 more touchdown thrown with 9 versus Tannehill's 8. But the 2 kind of big numbers that really stand out are interceptions and passer ratings in head-to-head matchups. Rivers, 10 interceptions in those 5 meetings. Tannehill, just 2. Now, again, that speaks to a Chargers defense that has struggled in the secondary for years to get some star players back there. I mean, Derwin James, if he stays healthy, can be a big impact player back there. But the secondary for the Chargers has been a mess year after year. So no surprise that, again, he's just, you know, not getting a whole lot of help from his defense there in terms of turning the ball over and getting the ball back. But 10 interceptions, not good for Phillip Rivers there. And Ryan Tannehill, again, just 2 interceptions in these head-to-head games. So when you don't have a secondary that during, obviously, all their matchups took place with Rivers on the Chargers. So for Tannehill to go up against a secondary that has struggled time and time again, you know, no surprise that he's only gotten 2 interceptions to his name in those 5 meetings. But again, he does have some talent to him as well. So it's not just on the secondary not being able to pick him off. Tannehill obviously doing a good job just from the pocket. And then another big change in these head-to-head matchups is passer rating. Phillip Rivers, a 79.7 passer rating in the 5 games. Tannehill, 105.8. So Tannehill, I mean, it's just been a lot more smooth sailing for Ryan Tannehill in the meetings prior. But now that Rivers is with a different team, we'll see if that changes anything in this series. But Yeah, I mean, I don't know why that surprised me so much that Tannehill had a 4-1 record against Rivers. I just wouldn't expect that, A, they've met 5 times in their career, and then, B, that Tannehill would have that much success against a Rivers quarterback team. Although it's kind of odd thinking head-to-head because not really on the field at the same time, but still. Didn't expect Tannehill to have that much success against Rivers in head-to-head matchups. But we'll see. I mean, this is going to be a fun game tonight, and I feel like this week is a tricky one to try to pick. I mean, I feel like I've said that a few times this season, but looking at the matchups this week, there are some that obviously really stand out as obvious, but there's more I feel like that are going to be really tough to call, and this is one of them. I mean, I and it happens in Nashville. I mean, this game is taking place in Tennessee, but still, the way that these two teams play each other, because they split last year's meetings, both winning on the road. Indianapolis won in Tennessee last year 19-17. Then Tennessee won in Indianapolis last season 31-17. So, I mean, with that, do the Colts turn it around and get the win on the Tennessee Titans? I mean, I feel like this is just a really tough game to call and one to pick. But I got to. It's part of my profession, you know? Gotta go out on a limb here. Can't just say that. I mean, I guess I could pick a tie, but really, what are the odds of that? I feel like I don't know why this is, but I feel like we most of the time see ties early in the season, but by the time you get to the second half of the season, you just don't get a whole lot of ties. So, I mean, Indianapolis, the 1-point favorite. Yeah, I think this is just going to be a really, really tight game. And I really don't know which way to go. I mean, I feel like if Indianapolis can get T.Y. Hilton back on track, because he hasn't had a 100-yard receiving game in quite some time. So I imagine that he is just itching to have that kind of a game. So, I mean, can Rivers and Hilton get on the same page and they keep Rivers protected, or does Derrick Henry just go on a complete rampage to the Colts defense? I don't know. I feel like I'm going to pick the Colts, though. I just feel like that defense is pretty solid, and I feel like they're going to take it as a personal challenge to hold Derrick Henry. You know, I mean, you're not going to stop him. You're just going to slow him down, but you slow him down enough. You know, Pittsburgh did it for a half. They slowed him down enough and were able to get a big enough lead to beat the Titans in that game. So I feel like if they can slow him down there in the first half, give themselves a chance in the second half, it's Indianapolis's game. Ah, man, this is a tough one. But yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Colts tonight. I think I'm going to pick Indianapolis to get the win over Tennessee. It could be a close game, and, I mean, if that happens, that could lead towards the Titans, because 5 of their 6 wins this season have been decided by 1 possession, which is tied most for such wins in the NFL. So, I mean, if it's a close game, especially with Tennessee at home, and that's when you just give it to Derrick Henry and let him run a man over. But I just feel like Indianapolis, that defense is going to step up and have a solid game to slow Derrick Henry down. And I don't know, that Colts offense, there's something about it that, you know, if Rivers is smart with the ball, because I think that's what hurt him last week against Baltimore. He wasn't overly smart with the ball and just gave the Ravens defense some not easy turnovers, but, you know, I'm not going to say they were very difficult turnovers to make happen for Baltimore's defense last week. So I feel like if the Colts defense can step up, stop Derrick Henry, the Colts offense gets back to, you know, putting up the amount of points that we've seen them put up this season. Again, you look at some of those last games, you know, they put up 41 points against Detroit, 31 against Cincinnati. So, I mean, this is a team that has potential to put some big points on the board. And it's going to be a tough, grinded-out game, but I'm going with the Colts on the road to get the win on Thursday Night Football. So there we go. I'm going to stop thinking about it. I'm just going to let that be my pick. Although I'm still thinking about it as I say that. But I'm going to go with the Colts. That's that. When we come back from the break, will Pittsburgh have Ben Roethlisberger on the field for this week's game? Patrick Peterson wants apparently more referees on the field in the NFL. And then Brett Favre, interesting comments about the Philadelphia Eagles. But we'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Taking a look at some other NFL headlines from around the league. Is Pittsburgh going to have Ben Roethlisberger back for their game against Cincinnati this weekend? Because as I mentioned, there are some matchups this week that winners really stand out. One in particular, Packers-Jaguars. God bless you if you pick Jacksonville in that game. But Green Bay's winning it. But there's games like that that really stick out where one team kind of sticks out. Most of them, however, to me, feel like they're going to be pretty tight to pick this week. One of those games, being Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, really depends on whether or not Ben Roethlisberger is out there. I don't think that Pittsburgh would lose this game really either way, but if Ben Roethlisberger is out there, I think no doubt Pittsburgh wins that game. Just from the way he's looked, the way he's been able to throw the ball around the field, just the balance that he's, you know, when he's back there throwing the ball, you got to think about the passing game. But again, James Conner is a beast on the ground. So just having Ben Roethlisberger on the field at quarterback, I mean, obviously he's a great quarterback and he's played really solid this year, but just gives Pittsburgh, you know, that added weapon and just makes the defense have to respect the passing game. Because if Big Ben doesn't play, then Pittsburgh goes with either Mason Rudolph or Josh Dobbs. And we saw what the team looked like with Mason Rudolph quarterbacking last year, and let's say less than impressive. I mean, there have been worse quarterbacks in the NFL, but he by no means put on any kind of a show. I mean, there was no real discussion about, oh, if Big Ben comes back, you know, next season, are he and Mason going to have to? No, there was no question anything. I mean, it was just, it was okay. He did an okay job being the quarterback for the Steelers last year. And then Josh Dobbs. So, If it's one of those two quarterbacks that's out there for Pittsburgh to take on Cincinnati this week, I still feel like Pittsburgh could get the win. But, I mean, Cincinnati doesn't have to respect the passing game that much. They can load up. They can try to stop the run, blitz the quarterback. I mean, they can just wreck the Pittsburgh offense from even getting going if Ben Roethlisberger's not out there. So I think this is a big question mark for the Steelers because they're 8-0 right now and seem to be, I mean, they had a scare against Dallas, but they seem to pick back up, get back into gear there in the fourth quarter. So this is a dangerous team that's playing great football this year. And if Ben Roethlisberger isn't out there, you think maybe they lose that game against Cincinnati, maybe that all that rhythm starts to kind of go away because then it becomes a question mark. Was he going to come back the game after that? Or how long will they not be with him? Obviously, an undefeated season is nice, but it's not the end-all, be-all. You know, if Ben Roethlisberger isn't cleared to play, obviously, you know, I mean, it's not like it's an injury, so they can just say, hey, work through it. He's on the COVID-19/reserve list, so he has to test negative because he was in close contact or he was a high-risk close contact after tight end Vance McDonald returned a positive test for the coronavirus a day earlier, and obviously they were in close contact. So they're preparing as if they're going to have him out there, and if he continues to test negative and not develop any symptoms, then Ben Roethlisberger would be eligible to come off that COVID-19 list on Saturday. So obviously we will know before kickoff on Sunday whether or not Ben Roethlisberger will be able to be out there and playing with the team. I haven't heard anything about him showing any symptoms or feeling ill or testing positive, so I feel like he's going to be out there for Pittsburgh. And there have been stretches in his career where he hasn't practiced all week, shown up, and had a good game. So, especially with his experience, too. I mean, with how much experience he has, especially with Mike Tomlin. I mean, if it was like a Brady situation where he's coming into a team where it's a new team, it's a new head coach, it's new guys around him, then I'd be like, yeah, it could be a little sketchy for him to miss this week of practice. But he knows these guys. He knows his coaching staff. He's so familiar with all the settings around him that him missing this week, again, I don't think that changes any kind of result of the game coming up if Ben Roethlisberger is out there for Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. So, I mean, it's a big question mark for the team, obviously, because you're 8-0. You want to keep rolling. You want to keep that rhythm. You want to keep that continuity with all your guys. It's one of those things this year that it's kind of out of their control. Again, it's not an injury where they can be like, hey, you know, we'll wrap it up, shake it off, and get out there. It's the COVID-19 list. It's on a timetable that you have to comply by and you know, again, test negative, not show any symptoms, and then, you know, if you do that, then you can be ready. So it's just not something that you can really control like an injury. And if Ben Roethlisberger is out there, no question, I think Pittsburgh gets that win. If it's Mason Rudolph or Josh Dobbs, still possible, but it definitely does not look as surefire at all for Pittsburgh. But we'll see what happens there. I mean, AFC North rivalry game. Anytime I hear the Steelers and Bengals are going to lock it up, going to play, I always remember that playoff game from a few years ago in Cincinnati where like three fights almost broke out at the end of the game. I think the Steelers won it like 18-16. It was kind of a sloppy game. A lot of field goals were being kicked. Fun. It's always fun when rivals get together. And now kind of switching gears here to another NFL headline, because Patrick Peterson, cornerback of the Arizona Cardinals, says that he wants more referees on the field during an NFL game. And the reason he wants that, he went back to the game this past weekend between Arizona and Miami. And going into the fourth quarter, Patrick Peterson was flagged for defensive pass interference on Devontae Parker. Now, Parker made the 17-yard catch, so the penalty was declined. But still, Patrick Peterson was beside himself when this... I mean, and honestly, what DB or cornerback or safety ever thinks they actually committed pass interference? Sometimes it's just super egregious, like they ripped the guy down or they tackled him around the waist before the ball even got there. And those guys will stand up and kind of hang their head a little bit, like, yeah, all right, I tackled him, that's pass interference. But essentially, if both guys stay on their feet, I have never seen a cornerback or a safety or anybody admit to or kind of put their hand up like, yep, I did it, sorry. So, I mean, is it really a surprise that especially a guy like Patrick Peterson, who is, I mean, I don't want to say egotistical, but he's, you know, he's a very confident guy, he's a very competitive guy, so I highly doubt any call that goes against him he will ever be in favor of. So it's not really a surprise that he's saying, you know, he didn't commit pass interference. But essentially his point was that the referee that threw the flag was behind him. And so when Patrick Peterson went over to him to say, you know, how could you throw that flag? As many DBs do, you know, what did you see? How could you throw that? I barely touched him. And what the referee said to him was, well, based on my angle, it looked like you engaged with him. And Patrick Peterson, again, kind of lost it on that comment. What do you mean your angle? And he was saying that referees couldn't really see the call. You know, he was behind, as Patrick Peterson was saying, he was behind me and couldn't see really how I was playing the receiver, but because of what he thought he saw, he threw the flag. So Patrick Peterson wants more referees on the field to be able to, I guess, get a better angle on the play? I mean, that's the thing. If the NFL, let's say they do, let's say they put three or four more officials out there on the field, they're still going to get calls you don't agree with. Even if the angle is better, even if someone is staring right at you guys, you know, from the other sideline so we can see, or from the middle of the field so we can see both of you square in front of him, he still might feel like you committed pass interference. And what if he throws the calls? Then what are you going to say? We need a referee per every player out there on the field? I mean, it's only a finite amount of space that you get to play. I don't think they need more referees. You know what I think might actually help this, though? It's not that I think you need more referees on the field. Bring in the freaking sky judge. Why the NFL is so against this, I still don't get it. Because this is exactly the situation where a sky judge could be useful. They took out the pass interference challenge, and rightfully so. That was a dumb challenge. But that could be a situation where coaches don't need to challenge. If the sky judge feels that it wasn't a pass interference, or that, you know, they ring down and they tell the referees to go look at it, that's where things like this can be avoided. Not that, again, I really think it's that big of a deal. No cornerback is ever going to admit they committed pass interference. But this is a topic, this is the kind of conversations that players have where they express frustration about officiating, that I always feel like a sky judge will solve this problem. Not completely. You're not going to get to a point where you please everybody in the NFL. But at least when you have a sky judge there that can ring down and be a part, I mean, you know, again, the penalty was declined, so nothing even really came of it. But if this was a bigger situation, if this was a pass interference call in the last minute of the game that put him inside the red zone, then you could have the sky judge call down and say, hey, I'm not sure it was pass interference. Look at it. Because you don't need coaches to challenge that. You can just have a, it could be a list of rules or certain flags that the sky judge can ring down and ask the official to review. Because I don't think you need more officials on the field. I mean, maybe you could put one or two more out there. But again, even if someone else has a different angle, they could still feel like you committed pass interference and we could be right back here having the same conversation. So I think a sky judge is still something the NFL needs to look at and really needs to think about incorporating down the line. Because you just avoid, I mean, again, you don't really avoid these kind of conversations regardless of that, but at least it could give a further explanation or, you know, if they felt it was egregious enough or you know, enough of a missed call, then you could have them ring down and have the judges review it or the referees review it. But we'll see. I just, you know, doesn't seem like the NFL is in any rush to get a sky judge in there. And last but not least, Brett Favre is not feeling the Philadelphia Eagles quarterback situation. He mentioned on First Take a couple days ago that essentially he thought Philadelphia should have stuck with Nick Foles and let Carson Wentz go. And I think I would have agreed with that before Nick Foles became the starting quarterback for Chicago. Because while I feel like it was the right move at the time for the Bears, Foles hasn't been the star that I thought he was going to be there with Chicago. Maybe you know, that doesn't surprise a whole lot of people out there. It surprised me. I really thought because of the success he had with Philadelphia, they're picking that team up when they lost Wentz, leading them to a championship, having a relatively solid season after that as well. I thought, man, that is the future of Philadelphia right there. It's proven that he can lead this team through a playoff run and lift that Vince Lombardi trophy. But Philly let him go. Stuck with Wentz, and it's not going great. And, I mean, he's on track to have his worst year of his career as Carson Wentz because he entered the team's Week 9 bye, leading the league in turnovers at 16, interceptions at 12, and sacks at 32. Now, obviously, that last one isn't all on him. Part of that's on his offensive line as well, but he's not helping the situation at all. He also ranks 31st. In completion percentage, and 29th in yards per attempt. So it's a rough year for Carson Wentz, who really hasn't looked the same since he came back from that injury that took him out of that championship-winning season for Philadelphia. But now that we've seen Foles in more of a full-time starting role with Chicago, I can't say he's looking all that much better than Carson Wentz right now. I mean, he had that great comeback against Atlanta, but he didn't start that game. He came in to face a defense that didn't prep to face him. And since he's taken over as the starting quarterback, yeah, they almost had a comeback win last week against Tennessee, but really it hasn't looked that great for Chicago. I don't know what the Bears do at quarterback anymore. I really don't. But I would say before, when Nick Foles was with Philadelphia, I absolutely agree with Brett Favre. I think they should have stuck with him. I think Doug Peterson's offense worked really well with Nick Foles. I think they got into a nice rhythm there. Again, you look at that postseason. It seemed like that Eagles team didn't skip a beat when Nick Foles was back there. I think that's a credit to Foles, but also to the coaching staff. So I think in terms of the Eagles, yeah, it may have been a better idea to go with Nick Foles than Carson Wentz. But I would say that now seeing Foles the starting quarterback in Chicago, it's not as convincing as I thought it was going to be. So, honestly, right now, I don't know if I'd take either. So, we'll see what Chicago decides to do, how long Foles gets. I mean, Trubisky, I think, is dealing with an injury right now, so I don't know if there's really an option to go to him anyway. But when Trubisky gets healthy, maybe we see another change at quarterback for Chicago, who just seems to kind of be unraveling after their exciting start to the season. But we'll see. But nonetheless, Doug Peterson essentially said, you know what, Brett Favre, he's a friend. That's his opinion. It's his words. It's not ours. He continued to back Carson Wentz, which, you know, as a head coach, even if they're not getting along in front of the media. That's what you want to see. And Philadelphia still has a chance to win the NFC East. I believe they're leading the division now. So, you know, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out. But when we come back, are James Harden and Russell Westbrook starting the process of leaving Houston? We'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, the Western Conference in the NBA is usually, I don't want to say the better conference, but obviously it earns that nickname, the Wild West, for a reason. There usually is a lot of talent, it's usually pretty tight, and it's hard to really dominate the Western Conference. And Houston, since getting James Harden on there back in 2012, it's been a competitive run, but obviously still missing that championship. And James Harden essentially is with his third different all-star teammate to bring that success to Houston. Tried to do it with Dwight Howard, tried to do it with Chris Paul, now is trying to do it with Russell Westbrook. And when you had Mike D'Antoni leave the team, you had Daryl Morey lead the team. Now there was some, you know, some new guys coming in, so you have some new ideas maybe, some new outlooks on how to pump this team up, how to get some more players and some more weapons around Harden and Westbrook, and how they could possibly be a better contender in the Western Conference. Because they have recently hired their head coach now, Steven Silas, there, and apparently Westbrook and Harden very involved in terms of who would be the next head coach there in Houston. So, like you would imagine, I mean, no surprise that players are starting to get more say and that's becoming more and more known. But, again, with the way those two stars are there for Houston, you would expect that they would have that kind of say, especially James Harden, because he has been there for eight seasons now, and he has been, you know, an MVP for that team. He's been had the scoring title run in recent years for that team, so he's proven to year and year and year be a star player for them. I haven't felt like his production, his kind of star power, has dropped off. He hasn't been able to get the right pairing. Because as we saw kind of the big three era for a while there, it's kind of gone down. Now every team trying to find that star tandem and then fill in the gaps around him. And the thing is with James Harden, I don't think there is a matchup or a duo that'll work with him, because he's so based on isolation plays in the NBA. I mean, when you look at someone like a Luka Doncic and a Porzingis, or a LeBron James and Anthony Davis, I think why some of those pairings work is because one's more inside, one's more outside, and it's not necessarily isolation as it is one trying to free up the other to be in the best position to score points. And I feel like with James Harden, he's not looking to get the ball off to anybody else. He wants everyone to clear out so he can go between his legs, behind his back, stutter step, step back, and shoot a three. But when you have somebody that's so kind of dead set in the world of isolations, it's hard to find somebody that can really match with that, in my opinion, if it's not a big guy. And of course, they traded away their only big guy in Clint Capella, or I should say they made like the last big guy they had in Clint Capella. So I feel like that possible duo, I mean, Dwight Howard could have been one that worked, but honestly, I mean, since Dwight left Orlando, I just haven't felt the same way about him. I don't feel like he's been that same kind of destructive force that he was when he was in Orlando at the start of his career. I feel like he just hasn't been that guy that he was there. And so when he got to Houston, I mean, coming off his first stint in L.A., it wasn't that great. So I don't know what they really expected from there in Houston, but no surprise that didn't work. And then again, you know, Chris Paul being the point guard that he is, you would think maybe that would work. You know, you have the guy that's looking to score in James Harden, then you have a guy that can run the offense and is looking to dish the ball off in Chris Paul and can also be a scoring threat in himself. But again, that clash of heads, that personality, that ideal kind of clash of heads between the two of them ended up being their downfall. The thing is now, when you look at James Harden and Russell Westbrook, why I don't think this pairing will work, because again, you have James Harden as the isolation guy, but again, Russell Westbrook also kind of in that mentality, I feel like now. I mean, Mr. Triple-Double when he was there in Oklahoma City, and I feel like those last few seasons he was there when he was getting just triple-double after triple-double after triple-double was, you know, he was in that mindset of give me the ball, I'm going to put this team on my back and try to give him the best chance to win, which was kind of a double-edged sword for Oklahoma City. And then bringing him from the Thunder to Houston when he was in that mindset, I feel like still, you have two guys that just want the ball and just want to score. It's not going to be the best pairing for a team that doesn't have a big man, doesn't really have any other kind of significant role player that could stay healthy throughout the whole, you know, run through the season and postseason. So this is a tough situation for Houston to be in. It's a tough situation for them to have to figure out because both these guys are, you know, owed some big amounts of money. Both are owed $131.5 million over the next three seasons. For James Harden, that includes a $46.9 million player option in 2022. For Russell Westbrook, that includes a $46.7 million player option in 2022. So, a season or two to try to figure this out, but I just don't think that this is the pairing that's really going to work for Houston. The only way it might work is if they get a big man back. And maybe they will now with Mike D'Antoni not there. But the problem is that Houston went after, I mean, when they go after stars, they aggressively went after stars. And James Harden kind of talked Houston to giving up a fair amount for Russell Westbrook. Again, not only did they obviously trade away Clint Capella, but the Rockets do not have a first-round pick in this year's upcoming NBA draft, or the next NBA draft. Having given it up along with Clint Capella in that four-team deal that brought Robert Covington to Houston. They have very limited kind of flexibility in terms of opportunities to make that roster better and to add players to that roster. Because again, in that Russell Westbrook deal, the Rockets owe the Thunder their 2024 and 2026 first round picks, top four protected. And Oklahoma City is a top 10 protected swap rights with Houston in 2021 and 2025. So the Rockets, they're dealing with two players that are going to get paid a chunk of money over the next few seasons and also not a whole lot of draft stock to build young players, to get young players and try to build them around this team. So for Houston, I mean, whether or not James Harden and Russell Westbrook do decide to leave, I feel like that championship window is closing a whole heck of a lot faster on Houston. And unless Harden and Westbrook can get out of that isolation mentality and wanting to shoot threes or go for the triple-double and focus more on trying to, I mean, they don't have to give the ball up every single time, obviously, but it's got to be more team-orientated and hope that the isolation thought is not as heavily focused on moving forward. Otherwise, it's just going to be, I feel like the same for Houston. They're going to be a playoff team, but there's not going to be that ability to make a playoff run. Because as soon as you get to the playoffs, shut down, do everything you can to shut down Harden and Westbrook, and the rest of the team just doesn't have the firepower to compete with other supporting roles in the NBA. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But I feel like even if Harden and Westbrook, one or both of them don't leave, Houston's title chances are quickly dwindling. So we'll see what they can do here in this offseason, this significantly shortened offseason. But when we come back, the Masters is underway, and round one was fun to watch. So we'll cover some of that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, there was an initial suspension of play at the Masters this morning for rain, and the first round has been suspended again. I doubt they'll get the rest of it in today, obviously, so they'll pick up tomorrow. But, you know, that's going to be the tricky Mother Nature type element here for a fall Masters. But nonetheless, Still fun to see golf on this morning when I woke up, and it was a lot of fun just to watch the Masters there have that on. Paul Casey, currently your leader by 2 strokes at -7, posted an incredible 65 on the opening round today. Tiger Woods also tied for 5th at -4, and this was the best first round score that Tiger Woods has had at the Masters with 68. So Tiger Woods, the defending champion of this event, and it's looked like he's there to fight for it. He's there to fight for that green jacket again. Doesn't necessarily want to put it on anybody else. Would like to see it on himself once more. But it was a lot of fun to watch the Masters this morning. We'll get, obviously, the Masters throughout the weekend, so can't wait for that. Paul Casey, Webb Simpson, Xander Schauffele, and Justin Thomas, your top four right now. Casey at -7, the other three at -5. So we'll talk more about that tomorrow. Obviously, the NFL, we'll talk about that tomorrow as well, and then we'll recap Thursday Night Football. So we'll talk to you tomorrow starting at 1 o'clock. But enjoy Thursday Night Football tonight. Peace.